Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to This is the Place, a podcast series from The Common Magazine on the New Books Network. The Common publishes literature and art with a modern sense of place. I'm Emily Everett, managing editor of the magazine and host of the channel. Today, we'll be talking to Naira Dusti about her story, The Little One, which appears in the most recent issue of The Common. Naira Dusti is an Iranian writer and translator based in Berkeley, California. Her writing has appeared or is forthcoming in Epiphany Magazine, the Massachusetts Review, and Nowruz Journal, among others. She holds an MFA from Boston University. She was also an intern at The Common while an undergrad student at Amherst College. Naira Dusti, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Emily, for having me. It definitely feels special to be doing this with The Common after all these years, so I'm excited.
Yeah. Have you back here with us. Would you set the scene for our conversation, describe where you're calling from now?
Yeah, sure. So I'm in Berkeley right now. I just moved in the fall or late August, and I got some nice succulents outside, nice orange tree, a lemon tree. I think it's like sour orange, which is nice because when it had blossoms, I could sort of smell it when I didn't have allergies. And yeah, it's nice. I got some nice dry flowers that I was not cool enough to dry myself. But I got them from the grocery store, and they're pretty nice. So, yeah, and recovering from the recent thunderstorms. So got the sun out, finally.
Oh, good. Yes, yeah, you've had some weather there for sure.
Yeah.
I would love to start off with a reading from your story. Would you read the first few paragraphs for us?
Yes, sounds great. All right. The little one. The baby would be fine, Saeed's wife said. As the family gathered around the dinner table for his special dessert, a beet cake with yogurt icing and his home-brewed beer, Saeed agreed to watch the kids on Thursday so that his wife could have a day to herself. They were his grandchildren too, after all. Although it was only his fifth day in the new country, he had already gotten over his jet lag, touched and kissed his family multiple times, and been given a tour of the neighborhood. He had also bought a road bike and signed up for a spot at the community garden. Now it was time to get acquainted with the grandkids. His wife, Guli, handed out plates, while his son buckled the baby in her reclined feeding chair. The baby had a fuzzy and soft textured mold that stretched behind her ear. It was harmless, but despite himself, Saeed found the look of it nauseating. He made sure to sit across from the baby, blocking the brown lump from his view. What about the little one? Saeed's son, Cyrus, looked at his mother as she helped the baby put on a bib. The baby began chewing on the plastic sleeve, which her grandmother rolled up.
Thank you for reading that. For our listeners who may not have read your story yet, would you describe what you feel the piece is about?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's a bit hard for me to summarize my own stories, but I would say that it's about Saeed. An Iranian grandfather whose son sort of came to the States as a graduate student and started a family and stuck around. And so throughout the years, his wife, the grandmother, has come to America to visit the family, see the kids. They meet up in other places in the world, but Saeed sort of has felt very strongly about not coming to America. And so he has never had a chance to see what his son's life in America is like. And then after a series of events, he decides to go and get a visa and come visit the family. And I think sort of throughout the story, he realizes that it's in fact harder to get used to his own family than the new country, basically. So, yeah, I hope.
That's perfectly said.
Thanks.
I've been lucky enough to read a few of your pieces. I've loved all of them. I'm so happy that this one has its home at The Common. And I'm wondering what inspired you to start work on it? Like, how did the first draft come together?
Thanks, Emily, for your sweet words about the story. So I think, honestly, this probably doesn't sound great about my writing process, but most of my stories don't really start with this some like bigger or grand idea of a plot or some sort of message I want to get across. It often starts with like a scene I find interesting and fun to expand, or if I'm lucky, with a character that I find interesting, and then sort of the story if I'm lucky, organically grows out of that. So this one, I think it's like a series of images and characters I wanted to explore. I'll start with the most ridiculous one, which is I started the story back in 2020, 2021, like the height of the quarantine, and sadly I was spending a lot of time on social media, and Instagram, which I don't have anymore, thank God, because I was spending a lot of time there, and I just came across this Iranian woman, older lady, who just looked absolutely gorgeous and very young, and sort of like, you could, you know, she dressed like a 15-year-old, and I just got so fascinated by it, how youthful she looked, and obviously it's Instagram and there's a lot of beauty there, and I just was like spending a lot of time scrolling and just looking at her images, and I wanted to imagine like what the life of someone could look like that, you know, outside that sort of, that was one image, which is I think ridiculous. And then the other two pieces, one another I guess sort of funny moment was I had an older teacher who once jokingly mentioned that his wife is away, and he's trying to figure out what to do for dinner and couldn't feed himself. And it was supposed to be funny, but then I thought it was like something there to work with. And I guess it made me want to imagine the life of an older man with the confidence that is unique to often men in, of that age, sort of navigating his life without a family. And then lastly, and I think this is really, truly the most important, is that I had a good friend who whose family had immigrated from Lebanon, and they had this family legend going about that everyone loved to talk about. I think about either a great grandfather or a great uncle who would just refuse to come to America. I mean, their most of their extended family had settled here, and he would just refuse to come see either his extended family or just his own children here. He had a fruit stand in a small town in Lebanon and would just say, "This is my life. My life is here. My friends are here. My fruit stand is here. I have no interest in coming to America." And I just thought that level of attachment to a community more than, I guess, to some degree, one's family was just, I was very intrigued by it, and it sort of became my legend too. My you know, I became very invested in this story, wanted to imagine what that would be like, and what inspires that. So sort of Saeed vaguely came out of all these images, and I guess Saeed's wife as well. And yeah.
That's so interesting. So Goli is inspired by the woman that you kind of saw on Instagram.
by an Instagram account of a social media model, I guess. Technically, but you know, just some images. I don't know anything more about that person.
No, that's so interesting, and I do love your point about the confidence of the older man sort of in his element, and it's so great. That's why it's so great to see Saeed really out of his element, and he doesn't have that same confidence, or he tries to, but it doesn't always go right. Yeah. Well, that's great. I think this story captures the tension of that situation with such great nuance. You know, Saeed is trying to settle in. He's sort of longing for his life back home, which he, you know, had a total handle on, knew how to do everything there. And, you know, wants to be with his family, but also feels a little alien from them. And sometimes they kind of annoy him or disgust him. And I just think that's so fantastic. Can you talk about getting that balance right, that complexity of his character and his desires?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, one thing that was interesting to me about this character is like, he's exactly the opposite of sort of with his attachment to his place and his lack of curiosity for seeing what the life that his son has established is like. It's exactly the opposite of what my own dad has expressed throughout the years. My sister lives in the Netherlands, and he's always wanted to come see what life is like for us here. And sadly, his visa has gotten rejected multiple times. So he's never really had a chance to see what our lives is like. And so it's just the complete opposite of that. And then I think to sort of bring out that tension and to imagine what it's like to have a community and sort of have that absolute lack of interest, bring out the tensions and the anxieties that finally provoke him and encourage him to come. To set that up, I chose the bike shop as a setting because I could just sort of imagine the sorts of gossips and the sort of gossip and the sort of like environment that, you know, you get the hookah out and then you come and talk about so-and-so's wife and so-and-so's son and who died and who got ill and who got divorced. And I thought that that could help me bring out the tension of like, these are his people. This is, it could really help me imagine a life that is full and that is not lonely for an older person. So I think that setting, and I did worry about it being maybe sometimes a bit cliche, but it's the setting that helped me bring out as much tension as I could and sort of pushing him to change his mind over time.
That's really interesting. I think one of my favorite moments in the piece is the conversation Saeed has with a Pakistani man he meets at the community garden. It's really funny. Like, it's tense, but it's really funny that they misunderstand each other. Saeed doesn't know what POC means, that it means person of color. Did you have fun writing that scene?
Yeah, thanks. No, I did. And I'm glad that you found it funny. I when I try to write somewhat funny scenes, it's, you never know if it lands or not. But so thanks for that. Okay. So frankly, I think part of it was just trying to play with this idea or explore, even if like in a very limited way, how drastically different racial formation and sort of the is, you know, in that context in Iran and in America. And that was maybe a little bit of myself in the story in learning how racial politics and everything else works in this country. And it took me more than a decade. And I'm still learning. Yeah. But really, and I just thought, you know, this guy is completely foreign. I mean, I came around 17, 16, and I'm still sort of figuring out how sort of, you know, that history and the politics of race work in this country. And just imagining this guy who is so into his own sort of idea of his nation and how ethnicity and race works there, and sort of getting introduced to how he's perceived here. And I just wanted to have fun with his reaction to that. And then the bit with POC, and this might be embarrassing to share, it was actually from my own personal experience. As a junior at Amherst College, I learned the word POC, at least the acronym. Someone invited me to a potluck, and they said, you know, it's a POC potluck, you should come over. And I embarrassingly enough went home and to my computer and looked up POC, and I realized it's people of color. So I just, you know, it's a moment that comes to my life a lot when I think about things I've learned about politics in this country, and I thought it can in some ways capture or encapsulate the humor and the sort of the learning process of it in some ways.
Yeah. I don't mean to make it sound like it's just a funny scene. Like, I think it's so fascinating. Like, the man who's been in America identifies with Saeed because they're both what he calls brown, whereas Saeed, of course, is Iranian, not Pakistani, and is like, what are you talking about? Like, we're not the same.
Yeah, definitely. And I had wanted a little bit of that sort of annoying, what I find annoying sort of attachment to the you know, greater Iran and whatever it is that Iranians can sometimes perceive themselves at. And then, definitely was trying to have fun with that. So I'm glad you found it funny too. No, it's definitely, I mean, it's meant to be funny. It's meant to sort of poke fun at this attachment that sometimes I see in not necessarily older generations in Iran either. I probably went through that phase myself too, but thank God I've grown out of it.
Oh, that's really interesting. I'd love to hear how this piece has shifted from the first draft. You know, like you said, you wrote it 2020, 2021. So it's a long time ago. I'm sure it's gone through some revision. I don't think we did much revision with it. I think we did fairly minor revisions to it after acceptance. But did you revise it a lot on your own?
Yeah, So honestly, with this story, not too much, but I did spend a lot of time with the character in like in my thoughts, and I think often it works better. I mean, I'm not against revising. I do revise a lot, but this is one of those stories where I thought a lot about, and then once I wrote it, I was with the plot as a whole, I felt content, at least at the time. I think most of the revision came in happened with the language. I had this, and that was the common suggestion too. I had this ending where I wanted sort of the language to represent what Saeed was going through as he was running after his grandchild, and I guess that's a spoiler, but and so I wanted, he had racing thoughts and racing heart, and he's just like, I want his sentences to be choppy and fast-paced, but it didn't quite work, and I'm glad I changed it. So yeah, I think that was the biggest part I changed, and a little bit of the language throughout the story, but this one, I don't think I had any major revisions, plot-wise at least, but yeah, this is what I remember more or less.
Do you have revision strategies that you return to or that you always go back to? I feel like I really don't have any, and I just, every piece requires kind of something totally different.
No, exactly. Yeah, absolutely. It helps when you have readers and they tell you. I have readers, friends I trust, whose writing I like, and I feel like it's best to get feedback from people whose writing you sort of like as well, because you can agree on certain things most likely. So I trust my readers a lot. But yeah, like you said, each piece is different. So I feel like it sounds like I don't revise because on this one I didn't do enough, but it's not the case for sure.
Yeah. I think I usually just end up writing, my stories are always way too long. So my revision is always sort of driven by the knowledge that it needs to be shorter, and that helps me like focus it. But if I ever wrote something that wasn't too long, I'm not even sure that I would know what to do next.
Exactly. Yeah.
So you did your BA here at Amherst College, and worked for the Common when you were here, and then you did an MFA at BU, and now you're in Berkeley. What are you doing there? Do you love California?
Yeah, I honestly love it more than I thought I would, which is good because I've spent most of my life in America on the East Coast, and I was like, it felt like a second big move, almost like moving to a new country again. But I actually love it. I love that I can bike everywhere. And did you ask what I'm doing?
Yeah.
I'm doing a PhD. So I just started my first year in like Middle Eastern languages and cultures, specifically working with Persian literature. So it's my first year. It's been fun. No, I'm loving the Bay Area more. Really, I'm surprised how much I've liked it. Food is great, amazing produce, yes. And yeah, it's just nice.
We had an event for the Common in Los Angeles, and it was my first time going to LA, and the food and the grocery stores and the flowers and the yards, it was just it's the dead of winter right now in Massachusetts, so it was really wonderful. I always get annoyed that California really is as good as everyone says it is.
No, absolutely. It's nice here because it doesn't get, the Bay doesn't get too hot, so
right.
I like that balance.
Oh, that's great that you're doing a PhD. That sounds so fascinating. I mean, I know that you do translation. You do translation from Persian to English and also from English to Persian. Is that something you're sort of focusing on while you're studying?
Thanks. Yeah, sort of. I have projects here and there. I have some like exciting news about Persian to English translation that I guess I can't officially announce yet, but I have something exciting going.
That's so great.
And then I just... had like 2 weeks ago the book came out, I translated Alexander Hamon's Book of My Lives into Persian. I did that also like in 2020 and worked on it throughout the years, with the publication date that got delayed over and over again as it happens because it needed a lot of revision, but it just came out 2 weeks ago and I'm very excited. I'm gonna go home in March and finally see a hard copy and bring one. So yeah, these are it took so long. It feels like I just finally finished it. So that's the most exciting news.
That's amazing. Wow. Congratulations.
Thank you.
That's so cute. I am so excited that you're going to be able to see it at last.
Thanks.
I've been at the Common for about 8 years, so I've seen a lot of interns sort of pass through our office, our closet office, and our staff meetings. And it's always really fun to see where everyone ends up. And I was so excited to see that you did this Persian translation of Alexander Hamon's book, because I remember you interviewed him for the Common in 2017. I think he came to campus and you sort of insisted that you needed to interview him. Is that what happened?
Yeah. Well, I actually, I think, sort of helped bring him to campus. I suggested him to the, I forget what series it was a reading series, and I suggested him. I met him in Bosnia when I was a sophomore at Amherst, and I got some money to go there because I was fascinated by the history of former Yugoslavia, and Amherst gave me money, and so it helped. So I spent the summer there, and when I was in Sarajevo, he came. He had just started a book festival called Bookistan. He gave a talk, and then I became interested in him, read his I'm not sure if you could call it a biography. It's like a collection of essays, personal essays. And I think especially at that age, it really had an impact on me because I was still trying to get used to life in America, and I wasn't allowed to visit home that often because of the limits of my visa at the time. So it was a very difficult, and you know, I wasn't technically an international student, but it felt like sort of immigrating at a young age because I wasn't really going back and forth a lot. And I think his book, especially at the time, was very approachable to me. It sort of talked about, of course, immigration and like getting used to life here, and also like American politics and whatnot in a way that felt very, that was very funny. He's a very funny guy, but then also very easy to understand for me at that age. So I really connected with the book. And so he came to Amherst and I really wanted to interview him. I would have, obviously it's been 6 years and 6-7 years, I would have done the interview very differently if I were to do it now.
I haven't looked back at it.
Yeah. I'm not quite proud of it, but you know, I was much younger. It feels really special to, I didn't think, you know, interviewing him at like 18 or so, I'm not sure how long it's been or how old I was exactly, but that I would be translating his book. But he was very sweet and generous when I wrote to him. I thought I wanted to start getting into translation more seriously. And then I had this, I talked to this publisher at home and they were like, all right, tell us like what suggestions you have. And I just felt like if that book really helped me through a very difficult time, and it just made sense for that to be the first book I translated. At the time, he hadn't been translated into Persian that much, maybe only one of his books. But now it's been, in the past 7 years, more of his work has been translated into Persian and published in Iran. But it still feels special to do, you know, specifically translate that book.
Yeah, absolutely. I do have memories of you sort of getting into translation sort of maybe the second half of your time at Amherst. So it's just magical to see, this coming together.
Thank you.
That's so great. So usually the last question we ask people on the podcast is what's coming up next, but it sounds like you have secret news you can't tell us yet.
Well, yeah, it makes it sound maybe bigger than it actually is. But I am also writing. I guess the biggest thing is important to put it out there. I'm looking for an agent.
Okay, great.
I just have realized that I'm a short story writer. And I'm writing short stories here and there. I've attempted novels, like probably three. And I've just realized I'm just not a novelist. I really am not. It's just not the form that works for me. It's not the form I have fun with, or not that writing is always fun, but it's just, but it's hard. It's hard to, you know, you finish the MFA, and for the MFA bachelors out there, I did love it. I went into it because I needed a visa, and I ended up loving it actually. And who doesn't want to get paid and write and get their piece of workshop? So, you know what, MFA bachelors, get over yourselves. It's like something, every time I tell people I did an MFA, I have to hear their take on it, and I'm getting quite tired of it. But
that's so funny. I just feel like these things just ebb and flow in the literary world, because like when I started at the Common and when I started writing, I felt that I was so insufficient because I didn't have an MFA, and everybody was like, you have to get an MFA. And now the pendulum is swinging back and people are burnt out on MFAs. So it's like, don't listen to anyone. Like Everybody needs something different. And exactly. what we all mostly need is time to write. And an MFA is exactly that.
No, exactly. That's exactly my take too. But yeah, so once I did that, I've just like, you know, the next step is, I guess I'm trying to get more pieces out there and get an agent. And I just, you know, they often express that they're interested in the novel, and then I just try writing more of it, and it just doesn't feel right. So it's hard to be when it comes to publishing taken seriously when you work most of the short stories. But it's all to say I'm writing short stories and struggling to write novels that I don't think are my thing to do.
Or eventually you know the thing might come that you are excited to write a novel.
Yeah, maybe. It's true.
Yeah, it's true. It's not something you should do unless you're excited about it, because it is so long.
Yeah, it's
true. Well, Nayari, thanks so much for joining us. It's been really great talking with you, catching up, talking about this beautiful story that you wrote for The Common.
Thank you so much, Emily. It was lovely to talk to you.
Listeners, you can read The Little One and subscribe to the latest issue at thecommononline.org.